All right, Dead Ramones, we're on. My name is Ryan Sim. I'm your host, and I'm here with my guest, Kionosh the Heavy.
How are we doing?
Am I getting the pronunciation right?
Yeah,
I take great pride in that.
You should. It's amazing.
You said once that I was like the only MC who's like pronounce your name right. Stuck in the back of my mind.
It's beautiful. Like, I love it. It means a lot.
I hate the substitute teacher like, now am I pronouncing that right? You know,
I've worked with the guy for 6 months and he's my boss, still doesn't know my name.
Oh, really?
Like, he's always like, Kia, and I always go Keanu, like the actor.
Just finish
that with like an oosh. He just doesn't. He's like, Kush. And he goes, I'm sorry, man. What is it? I'm like, dude, it's been 6 full months. You sent me so many invoices. You paid me so much money. You don't know my name?
It's so funny. Thanks for coming down, man. You came all the way from Sydney's north side.
Wurrunga, brother.
Wurrunga, yeah, baby.
Born in... No, that's not true.
What were we about to say?
Born and raised.
Born and raised in Wurrunga. Kionosh the Heavy was born and raised in Wurrunga. Now, like, people might not know your name yet, but you're a stand-up comedian, and I jumped at getting you on this podcast like quickly after you won the New South Wales Raw final. So that's pretty exciting.
Huge deal.
I can tell you're really excited about it.
This is it for me, guys.
For anyone who doesn't know, there's like this, like, it's kind of, I don't even know who runs. I guess Century runs Raw, right? But it's like kind of linked with. Yeah.
Genuinely no idea.
But it's weirdly linked with like Triple J and stuff like that.
Oh, is it?
Kind of.
Raw?
Yeah.
I think Triple J did comedy.
Like, maybe it used to be. I don't know. Maybe not anymore. But basically, it's like an open mic, nationwide open mic competition. Yep. And you get, now you're getting sent down to the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, and you're going to be in the national finals, which is televised on SBS.
I don't know.
It'll be on YouTube, guys. Still gonna watch Kionosh
on
YouTube
ones,
when it comes out.
Like, yeah, on YouTube.
One of the subsidized ones.
We might delete it. We'll see how it goes.
I know. I've heard even if you don't do great, they'll add a laugh track for you. So don't
wait.
Worry.
What?
I've heard.
Yeah, but I don't want to.
That's
laugh
second or
track.
Third. That's second or third.
I want to hear my mum's disappointment.
But is it like, I know. Like I relate. I relate to what you said to me the other night. Like this isn't the reason necessarily we do stand-up comedy, but I think it's very cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
I think it's cool.
It's definitely cool.
Yeah, yeah.
To be doing comedy for 20 minutes and perform to this many people, that's pretty cool. But there's it's relatively arbitrary if you really think about it.
You're very level-headed, and I relate
to wear and all that stuff. But there's a cool... I think even doing the competition's really cool. A lot of people are like, it's my first gig ever. You're like, you're doing the Comedy Store to 200 people, your first time ever. Mm. That's really cool. It's kind of crazy.
I would
freak out, to be honest, but that is... the opportunity is really cool. The fact that this is just a thing that exists for people.
You get in front of people.
But people caring about it is a bit weird.
I think like for me, when I was in, because Raw, look, honestly, like for anyone who's listening who's not a part of the comedy scene, Raw is such a big part of the annual Australian comedy calendar.
All these open micers like show up for Raw. Like they don't exist and people, then they come out.
People who
for
don't
Raw
exist from do Raw. Yeah, exactly. And then there's people like you and myself, like when I first started out, where it's like, oh, this is what we're doing. That means I'm also doing this competition. Might as well.
Yes. Yeah.
Like that's kind of how
spot.
I approach
that's
it.
What I thought. I was like, it's a really cool spot. You get to do the Comedy Store. Sick.
It's great. Yeah. While you're in it, I don't know if you relate to this, but I like talk to our couple of mutual friends like Stella Wu and stuff like that who were doing it this year.
Stella got wildcarded.
Oh, down to Melbourne?
Yeah.
She's in the final? Yeah. Oh, that's so good, man. I love Stella.
Yeah.
That's so good. Yeah. I'm so happy about
very
that.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Because when I heard you won and she didn't, I was like, oh, fucking judges.
Honestly, racist. It's always racist. Sexism, racism, picking-ism, dude. Either way, I'm not cool with it.
Whatever the ism is, I hate it.
Picking-ism, dude.
No, that's cool. Yeah, Stella's great. But what I'm trying to get at is like when I was actually doing the competition, it felt like psychological warfare. Like it is great. It's so much fun for anyone who wins their heat, wins the semi, wins the final. It's like, oh, this is fun. This is fun. This is, and it's like, whatever. But like when you're in this competitive kind of mindset and you don't get through, it's like crushing.
Wow.
I think especially 'cause I was so early into my career, I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing... Like, there's a lot that
goes on.
Even if
the set goes really well, you reckon? Because that was for me. I was like, if you're doing great at the Comedy Store, surely that's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, it must be different to do it there. Because, like, in Brisbane, we don't have the Comedy Store. We just did it at the sit-down comedy club.
Is that a big room, though?
It's a big room, but it's like...
Because to me, the thought was like, if you can...
Kind of a different attitude, I think. Yeah.
Oh, it's not iconic or anything like that. In terms of, like, the Comedy Store's got a whole... ring to it that everyone likes.
I think so, right. Yeah, maybe that's just me.
I was like, if you can do this many people this early on and do well, that's a pretty good sign for what's to come in terms of like actual the reality of doing gigs and being funny and stuff.
That's the sign of a healthy mind.
It'd be crazy to crush at the Comedy Store and then not get through and be like, I got to change everything. I suck. It's like, you destroyed.
So you're,
you know what they're looking for, but you killed it.
I mean, like, you're already, I think, that's so funny. Like you said, just before, you've only been doing comedy for 20 minutes. But like, not only are you very funny, that mindset is so far beyond that. And I think maybe that comes from playing in bands a little bit. It's like the creative process. It's like, I'm not just going to stop. This is what I do.
Yeah, but I think I have different goals. I think a lot of people, I've talked to some comics who are like, I'd love to... Like, some people want to do comedy to get on a talk show.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Get their own thing. Yeah. Or, like, they have big... I want to do comedy. Like, I just want to
I'm the same. I just want to do live stuff.
When I do Rat Club and there's 30 people there and they're laughing, a part of me is like, this is the top. This is
it. It's very nice of you to say that.
They're having a beautiful time.
It's very kind
and so
of you
am
to suggest
I.
There were 30 people at my room.
first time I did it, it was
yeah, sometimes
people
it's...
on both sides. Yeah, yeah. And it was packed out. I mean, it was amazing. I loved it. And just everyone there enjoying it, part of me is like, this is it for me. This is great.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
Like that's exactly what I relate to. I don't want to be on the project.
No.
And I'm not like fucking people who on the project make so much money and good on them. And like someone like Sam Taunton is not only an amazing live stand-up comedian, but then he's also making all this money.
Great
for him.
Of course.
That's not what I want. And maybe that means I'll be poor for the rest of my life, but I don't want to be on Australian TV. I know that.
Yeah. But even beyond TV, I think if you're doing a certain kind of comedy or anything, like you've seen my act, that I've lost half the world already. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But if you go clean, if you go family friendly, if you go broad, like you are making definitely more money.
Of course,
it's a better career choice.
Yeah.
At some point you realize, if this is what I'm doing, these are the realities.
Like, yeah, of course.
There's no way you're going to that world because you're saying no to it essentially.
Yeah.
But if you just do what you think is funny, hopefully that'll channel into the people. I always think like, what do you want to watch? What do you want to? What kind of comedy would I want to see? And it's like,
totally, man.
I don't want to see a brown guy go up there and go, "No, I'm a terrorist, right?
Hey, you might recognize me. I was your Uber driver."
There we go. Which, first of all, great bit if you're doing that material. We have nothing against that. Keep doing it. But if you're not, I personally love when you see a guy and they don't bring up anything and then you realize, oh, this guy's from Pakistan or whatever, and they've just got all these nuanced, unique ideas that have nothing to do with, oh, I better acknowledge this, I'm terrible, and all that stuff. Not to say that's true. A bad thing, but...
Well, Australia loves, like, Australia, I guess, like, a good example of that is, like, WOG comedy in Australia.
Yeah.
Like, so much, like, that's such a big industry. And again, good on them if they found their audience, but it, like, is centered around... I mean, it's reclamation. I think we could go into like a fucking TED talk about like the positives and the negatives of it. But like, it does stem from an inherent racism in Australia against immigrants. Like that, like the whole WOG comedy
thing.
This
is like a correction?
I guess. So they're like, the comedians themselves are reclaiming it, but they're still, I guess, trading on... You know, the slur in the first place, like WOG in the first place, even though they've reclaimed it.
Oh, right.
Like,
but there is a fascination with those cultures now.
Sure,
the
absolutely.
Australian audience wants to see Asian comics, WOG comic, more than they want to see other white comics now, it seems.
Yeah,
like,
I wonder...
Unfair, I think.
Yeah, I wonder what... I don't know what that's rooted in, and I don't feel like it puts me at a deficit. Like I'm a bit like you. I'm just like, it's such a cool melting pot of... culture, like stand-up comedy. It's just like there's no barrier to entry, and that is both good and that's beautiful and disgusting at the same time.
No, all of my, like, if you know, people say like, oh, you know, I have a black friend, a gay friend, this and that, they're all comics.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like, you meet 20 comics and it's every type of person, yeah, every exactly. personality. Not even that, like every lifestyle. This guy's I'm rich and I'm a lawyer. This guy's like, I have no money in my account and I'm just doing comedy to get, and they're both, you know, terrible. It's great.
Yeah. They're both really bad at comedy. No, it is. No, but that's so hilarious that you could go to even like out of the open mic, take it out of the open mics. Like you're going to book shows, you're going to see fucking North Shore private school boy Tom Whitcomb, right alongside traveling hobo Nick Sun, and they're both like very funny, interesting people. But it's like, so it's like all at all levels, you get that.
And the crowd doesn't mind that at all. Like if the common language is funny, they're not going, why is this guy after this guy? There's such different energies. They're like, they were both really, really funny, and they cut through, like they connected.
That's so interesting. Like, so how long have you? I mean, we'll get into. Sorry. We are going to talk about a hardcore record today, but I want to introduce you guys to Kianosh. How long, when did you start doing stand-up?
So properly, I think about 2 years ago, I did my first spot. No. So I've been doing comedy properly since last April.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So that's just under a year now.
Cool.
Yep. But like 2 years ago, I did one spot at Miles Milson was hosting it in... bottom of Chippo.
Dude, I did that room.
Yeah, it was super happy friends, something like that.
Super happy friends.
Super best friends.
Super best friends club.
And he's in the corner commentating your set.
Yeah. Those were the first rooms I did when I moved to Sydney.
It was right after COVID, right?
Yeah, right after COVID.
Because during COVID, I wrote for like 3 months.
Yeah.
I wrote, I'm not kidding, like 3 hours of material. It's horrible. Like I have like an 18-minute bit on terrorism. Like George Carlin-y just without George Carlin without the punchlines. Just me like, here's what's wrong
So George Carlin.
Yeah, there we go. Late George, anyway. And then it got to a point where I had written so much and then I did the spot. And Miles was like, that's like a rehearsed play. And he would say in between the beats, he'd go, pretty good, not bad.
That's fucking awesome, Miles.
Not bad at all. You gotta do like...
I love Miles.
He's the best. And I didn't know that wasn't all open mics. It's like, there's just a guy in the corner. There's no audience. I brought three friends and they were the whole crowd. And I was like, why is every comic talking to them only? And now you know, because they know who the comics are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I keep forgetting we're on a public fucking platform. He got that idea from Sticks and Stones. I don't know if you ever went to Sticks and Stones. No. So that was Elwood and Rodney Todd.
Okay.
And it was a similar setup where they would host the show and they would sit there as a panel and an open micer would get up and be like, oh, my fucking mom's a bitch. And then Ben L would be like, do you really think she's a bitch? Like that was the show. They'd kind of like try and get to the core of what this material was trying to say. And therefore force these open mics to like write better material.
Oh, that's actually really interesting. I think he did mention that he took it. He was like, I just stole it from there.
I like that setup, honestly. Yeah, yeah. I like Elwood's like armchair psychologist approach. He'd be like, so why do you think, do you really feel that? That's how Huey got good, man.
Really?
Yeah, Huey, like I remember seeing Huey a few times and like at gigs like Sticks and Stones, and him and Ben just had this rapport, and like I think Ben really got Huey to kind of like interrogate himself and be like, oh, so what do I actually want to, and now Huey's just fucking funny and so tight and so
figuring all that out live in front of everyone is
that's the only way to do it.
The proper crowd or is it just open micers?
You know, like a normal open mic. Weeks some weeks no, but yeah. Sorry, we're getting deep into Sydney.
Then I did one more like later that week in Mosh Pit, you know, their Monday one, which is like music and stuff. And they record those, so that actually exists somewhere. Is my second set
crazy.
Ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I was writing a screenplay and I was like, I'm gonna finish this screenplay and I'll go right back into comedy. And that was 9 months.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I
nice. Yeah. But to me it's obvious that you're a comedy fan.
It's the same as everything I ever did. You're obsessed with it for a long time and you're like, but I could never do that. Who am I to try to write a screenplay? Oh, I'm not gonna rap.
Like,
why don't you just do it?
We're
like everyone sucks at the beginning. And something always like for me made it like COVID. You're like, well, I'm at home. I may as well write screenplays. There's nothing else to do.
Yeah, right.
I'm reading these jokes, I may as well perform them. Like, the reason I actually started doing comedy was because I wrote jokes that I thought, well, I want to see if these are funny. Like, I've written them.
Yeah.
I want to see. And I was like, guess I got to go up. Genuinely, still to this day, a big part of comedy for me. Like, now I just love the crowds and stuff, but was just, do these jokes work? I would have given it to someone else to do. I just wanted to know if the joke, you know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't about me at all.
That's cool.
It was the jokes.
Well, yeah, when I started open mics,
which
it was
sucked
me-
when none of them worked. Terrifying.
It was me and my friend, and we were both writing students at QUT in Queensland, in Brisbane. And me and him both sort of started at the same time. And what we always talked about was like, when you're writing creative when you're writing creatively, like whether it's nonfiction or fiction or whatever, you got to wait to get feedback. You got to let other people read it. You got to like put it aside and come back to it like a week later or whatever. Whereas with jokes, you go up there and you get feedback straight away. And I think that's kind of where the addiction came from, at least for us. And maybe that's the same for everyone. But we were able to see the direct kind of comparison to like, writing alone on your laptop and trying to write a story, and then compared to jokes, which is just like yes or no straight away. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's very satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. But you used to play music as well, you were saying?
Yeah. So I think I was 16. I started rapping.
How old are you now? Sorry. I don't
27.
Know. 27. Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. So you're not that. I mean, I'm still a fucking full decade older than you, but. Like,
really?
Yeah, man.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
doesn't show. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Doesn't
show.
No, not at all. That's crazy.
Clip it.
Well, white don't crack either, apparently. This is amazing. Yeah. 16, I started rapping, just like instrumentals and stuff. And then I, similar to comedy, actually, like you write jokes and like, I got to perform them. Some, like one of those scammy festivals, you would have probably heard of these. They probably also exist in comedy. Actually, they do exist in comedy. It's like a bringer, but it's the most extreme bringer where it's like you're not even eligible for the competition unless you bring like 20 people.
Oh.
They got to buy two tickets for $30. Like they're making like 600 and you lose. It was crazy. And it was
so
like,
this is like a rap festival, like hip-hop festival?
And yeah, I was like, guess I need a band. Guess we got to kind of make a show.
Yeah.
Then I got a few of my like closest friends together. One's a drummer, one's a this. Mm-hmm. Mark Zion, bass. He was the bassist in my band.
Oh, really?
And then, we became just like making my rap songs into instrumentals, and then we slowly got a few other members and stuff and became Metalhead Mark Sahin.
He played live hip hop with you.
And then we transitioned to this band called Motherfunk, which was like hip hop fusion, sort of funky, soulful sort of stuff.
That actually sounds
we got a
cool.
singer, we got it was actually really fun.
And like, you rapped?
And I rapped.
Yeah,
and,
nice.
But it was a full band, so it was like just having a singer changed everything, because it used to just be me, so it's either instrumental or just rap, whereas she could have just sung for a whole song. I'm not even in it.
Yeah,
it's a whole different vibe. And then we got this drummer, Max Valentine, shouts out, who just changed. He came into the band and was like, all right, let's just be our own band now. Like, let's not just do Keanu's songs as instrumentals. Why do we want a 4-minute loop of, like, we're a band?
Yeah, yeah,
let's
cool.
Let's structure our songs. Let's write songs. And then we just became a proper, like, it was its own thing.
That's
and
cool.
I was the rapper. It was way better.
I love that.
Then we did all these shows, doofs and all that stuff.
Yeah, okay,
but it's really
interesting.
I didn't talk to the crowd, like, at all during shows.
So was this like, so you said you started rapping at 16. How old were you when you started like playing in the like what you just said with the drummer and stuff?
Probably like 8. The sort of just doing my own stuff as a band version was like 17, 18, 19. And then from like, 19, 20, we were like, let's
so you just
do
kept
our
going
own
on.
Thing.
Yeah, cool.
And also I was running the band, managing the band, and then like label it, like everything was me. So
that's
it was
crazy.
Just emails all day. And
so like 5 to 6 years of this?
Yeah, getting the gigs, getting like the prices, trying to get more money. And
actually,
we got to a place where it's like, I think bands now, if you can be like a 2-3 person band, get like 700-800 a gig, you could live off three, four gigs a week. Like,
We totally
can't really do that. I mean, maybe some people can.
Yeah, that's so funny that the, because I played in bands as well, but obviously like in the punk and hardcore scene, and it's like, you're mostly just playing for free. And if you go on tour, like the thing is, like most of the shows I remember playing, there were local shows and a band, and it was an interstate band coming up on their East Coast tour.
Right.
And so you'd play the show to like maybe like 15, 20 people, and you would sacrifice your fee for the touring band because you knew how hard it was. And then that would be reciprocated when we went down to Sydney or when we went down to Melbourne. So like,
that's nice.
Yeah, so playing for free most of the time, and then like any money you get on tour just goes into the van. Like it just goes to petrol or it just goes to...
Well, actually, this is an interesting question. When you did punk and hardcore shows, your whole lineups, like your openers, everyone would have been a similar vibe, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Did you find that you all hung out more and got along more, or no?
I think I find a lot of parallels, at least in terms of the community. I find a lot of parallels with comedy, where they like there are these like cliques and stuff like that, and there are beefs and everything, okay. But it's very small.
I felt scale. Comedy was instantly way more supportive in a real network compared
when you're
to
at that open mic level, bands. Definitely.
Yeah, yeah, true.
I think at that open mic level, it's just everyone's just together, just trying to make shit work, just trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah, right.
But I do find I don't know if it's even like which career level you're at. It's probably just like the longer you're in any sort of community, the longer, the more this sort of like interpersonal conflicts or whatever are going to pop up here and there.
It's kind of like getting older. It's
getting older.
40 friends, and now you have like 6 proper friends, but you love them and all.
It
that
is
stuff.
Literally just getting. Yeah, that's all it is. But in Brisbane, it's interesting because like in Brisbane, because it's such a small city, the hardcore scene. Like when I got into it, and we'll talk about it, because like we're talking about 2003. That's when I got into the hardcore scene.
Wow,
there was a solid hub. Like it was a venue called Mary Street, and there was like a discreet hardcore scene. Like these are hardcore bands, they play this venue, and there's different styles of subgenres of hardcore and everything, but it's like very clearly a hardcore scene,
right?
And pretty quickly that kind of splintered as bands broke up and like younger people like myself came through and wanted to do slightly different stuff. For the most part, when I was involved in the Brisbane scene, it was pretty diverse, so it's all like aggressive music, I guess. But sparsely different bands, like doom metal bands playing with like fast punk bands, that's who was in the scene, and it's like, okay, it's heavy guitar music, let's just put a show together.
Okay. Do you find that you're all hanging out in the green room, or it's still kind of band to band?
green room? No? We played a most shows were at a karaoke bar.
Oh, shit.
Most shows we played were in the showroom of this karaoke bar called Fat Louis.
Oh, specifically in one. Oh,
yeah, Fat
wow.
Louis upstairs on Albert Street in Brisbane. That was like a real hub for shows. There was also an all-ages venue, which was also a recording studio called Sun Distortion.
Okay.
Shout out to Chris Brownbill for running that. And that was just in a factory space. Like they were just like true like crust-punk living like, in a factory space, they converted 2 of the offices upstairs to bedrooms.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Recording studio down there, like live room downstairs. And then like in the actual warehouse, live shows. So they lived there and had live shows there, and he fucking worked there. Oh, and he's great, man. He's a
great... still a thing?
No, he now runs a studio called Underground.
Okay.
And I think he's definitely moved locations, but for a few years, Sun Distortion was the place.
And those two venues?
Oh, no, sorry. There were other venues as
but
well,
you
but
guys
those were like the main ones. Those
crazy
were the frequent
that two
ones.
People
yeah.
can yeah. be the culture?
Yeah.
Like if
yeah,
one of
yeah.
them leaves, you're like, but...
Yeah. So I said Chris Brownbill, he's a recording engineer and he ran Sun Distortion. Chris Hunter was this older guy, punk guy who ran the punk show on the community radio in Brisbane, Triple Z, and he booked the shows at Fat Louis. So I just thought if I'm naming one guy, I should name the other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Give credit where
both
credit's
Chris's,
due.
I
yeah, think. Yeah, both Chris's, yeah. yeah. And there were lots of other shows, and like we'd do shows in like the practice rooms just for fun, just like pack out a practice room That's and sick. Just like play and like, yeah, it's just like whatever we could do, basically. Very DIY, yeah.
Is it a small, in terms of crowds, a lot of the people coming back that you find? I feel like with smaller niche things, they're more loyal.
Most of the people had their own band. Most of the people in the audience were also in bands.
Yeah, right.
I think
similar to open mic again.
Yeah. Like most of the people in the audience are doing a spot in 40 minutes
drag
time.
A friend or two.
Okay. But yeah, okay, let's jump in. So yeah, like
let's
I said,
it.
The year is 2003. The record that we're talking about today is by one of arguably the best hardcore bands to ever exist.
Whoa,
Terra from Los Angeles, and we're talking about their debut. I would call it an album because there's 9 tracks on it, but apparently this is their EP. because it only goes for 16 minutes.
Really?
Nine songs, 16 minutes.
I listened to something completely. I listened to 22 songs.
But it's the live version. It's got a live set from Tokyo on Spotify. Yeah, which is good. I actually listened to it as well.
I have some notes on that as well.
The live energy is great. Yeah. But no, Lowest of the Low. This was their debut after their demo. This was their debut release. Terra, they formed in Los Angeles in 2002. But... So they released this very quickly after they formed as a band. But the thing about this band is like they had pedigree.
Right.
They'd all been in bands in the 90s that were pretty revered, at least in underground status. So Scott Vogel, the vocalist, he was in a band called Buried Alive, who are like a metallic hardcore band from the 90s. If people in the underground, like I said, they revere them. And then the drummer Nick Jett and the guitarist Todd Jones, they were both in a band called Carry On.
Okay,
which were more like a I'm gonna throw a lot of genre titles at you, don't stress too much. But like people listening will know what I'm talking about. I guess Carry On were kind of like an evolution of like the Youth Crew sound. I'm not that familiar with Carry On, but like they had a bit of melody in there, but like just sort of like a pretty straightforward hardcore band from my exposure to them.
Carry On.
And I think Carry On were a little bit more beloved than Buried Alive. Buried Alive seemed a bit more niche because they were kind of that early like combination of metal and hardcore that happened during the 90s, whereas Carry On was like, I guess like maybe a bit more accessible for the younger kids.
I'm just thinking of a luggage joke. I can't come up with anything. I've been trying for 2 minutes, man. I'm dying up here. My brain just has nothing. There's got to be something.
So they were like small. They were like a small suitcase. but I like those two band names, like Buried Alive and then Carry On.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those are the two extremes at which hardcore music kind of operates at.
Well, even Terra, actually, I was listening to one of the songs and I was like, I feel actually scared. And then I remember the band's name is Terra and I thought, this is pretty fun.
But it's like this like ultimate negativity, like buried, like, you know, just like this darkness, like buried alive. Mm. But then like the positivity of like, but we'll carry on.
Yeah.
I've been buried alive, but I'm going to keep going. Like, what?
Actually, I wanted to bring this up. There was a very big plot twist in the live part when he's like, first of all, it's in Tokyo.
It's in Tokyo. Live set, like, from Tokyo. I don't know what year it is.
He starts it with like, how are we doing, Tokyo? He's still screaming at them in the intro, which is amazing. And they're not mic'd up at the beginning, I feel like. So you're like, is there no crowd? But then later on, you can hear like specific claps. Like they must be playing at night. You're like, oh, Steve's in the crowd. Like, you can hear specific claps, which is really amazing. And then there's a point where they're doing, I've written all this down. There's a point where they're doing the live show. And he talks about how like hardcore is... it's not like the rock star bullshit.
It's nothing like
the rock star bullshit. And he goes, hardcore is about... And the first thing he says is friendship.
Yes.
That was amazing, dude. That was a plot twist and a half. Friendship.
We're terror.
Friendship. Like, just hug each other and have fun. It does seem like they're actually very... the community is very supportive and lovely and compassionate.
Yeah, it is. And this isn't my joke. This is, you know, the comedian Jordan Jensen, American comedian.
Of course, of course.
So she always says this, especially when they have hardcore dudes on their podcast. Jordan Jensen, she has this joke, which I think is so funny. It's like you listen to like the absolute toughest, most aggressive, disgusting music you've ever heard, and then the vocalist would be like, all proceeds from tonight are going to the Happy Bunny fuzzy rescue shelter. like they're all vegan, like they're all like,
yeah,
not these guys specifically, but in general, like I think it's very funny.
Sounded like a great guy.
Just he in between seems songs, like a cool dude,
I love you guys,
man.
You're like family to me, just like the nicest thing, screaming it at them obviously, but just the nicest sentiments of all time. And you're like, the music versus it makes sense when you really think about it.
Yeah.
But at the beginning you assume like, what are these guys doing before shows? They can't be going to like museums and having frozen yogurt. That's insane to imagine. But they probably are like sweet little angels. They're like little teddy bears.
Yeah, the vegan restaurant.
Who are just stuff. A little angry at the world. Stuff.
Well, I think what comes through is, and I think Terra do this so well, like they've really like boiled it down, at least on these first, on like this is their first thing. And then the album that came after this was called One with the Underdogs, which is... everyone thinks that is their best record. But I'm just so attached to Lowest of the Low because this is the year that I really started going to hardcore shows. And I think this was just one of the first records of like what people would call true hardcore that I got exposed to. And it's just stuck with me ever since.
Yeah, that nostalgia is going to
Yeah. But even when I listen to it today, like I listened to it like the last few days and today, I'm just like, these songs are just like I still feel it. Like it comes through the headphones for me. Like I can feel like the energy. Yeah. Like it's very like tactile almost.
Have you seen this live or anything?
Yeah, I've seen them live. Yeah, they toured Australia.
More than anything, like I don't listen to hardcore. It's probably the first album I've ever listened to front to back.
Yeah.
But it feels like you're in a place when you hear it. Like, you know, like dingy, beer soaked, you're being tossed around. Like it actually has a place to it when you hear
it.
Yeah,
yeah. And
definitely. I feel like it would be the most satisfying thing to see this sort of thing live.
Man, they're incredible. So What I was going to say before is, like, I think Terra really solidified this idea of, like what you were saying before about, like, it's about friendship. I'm like, what? I thought it was about burning things. Like, I thought it was about setting small...
I'm doing horrible hate crimes. Yeah. And this guy's like, love everyone. I'm like, sorry, what?
So they solidified this idea of, like, life is fucked up and hard, and that's why we value our friends and our family much.
Yeah,
right. And it's like, there's a song on it called Push It Away where... It's kind of at odds with that idea, but he's like, you know, I walk alone among my enemies, like, and it's like, there's a great lyric at the end where it's like, something like, there are only enemies. Like, there are only enemies.
Damn.
But I think like, if you actually want to analyze it, he's talking about, I guess he's just talking about mainstream culture, like most of the world.
And then
we've got our own little scene here where we can sort of rely on each other. We have this outlet, like we can just get all this shit out. Like, we can just sweat it out in this room for 20 minutes and then
it feels like he has another song where he talks about, like, in the Tokyo part.
I'm glad you listen to these because, like, I was like, you don't have to. You don't have to listen to
it. I actually really enjoyed it.
But I think it gives you an insight to his mind.
He specifically talks about how it's about, like, if you tell anyone what to do and if you're in their way, then fuck you.
Yeah.
Be whatever you want. Be whoever you want. So it very much feels like you can join this family. We love everyone. But if you're in the way, fuck you.
Yeah,
you
know I mean? I was reading an interview with him from, like, more recent, because they're still going. They released an album in 2022.
Nice.
Yeah. But I think he values... I mean, I know diversity is kind of like a catchphrase almost, like the word itself seems to have lost a lot of meaning, but, like, I mean it in the literal sense. He seems to value diversity in the scene, and whether that means, like, racial diversity or like trans kids getting into hardcore, all this sort of stuff.
Cool.
Like, he seems to, like, it's such a masculine sounding type of music, but like when he speaks in interviews, he's just like, I just want... And he was talking about, like, there's a lack of violence in the modern day scene, which I think when they were coming up, it would have been very different. Yeah, there was a lot of gang activity and stuff back in the day. And he just seems to really value, like, a good time.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it boils down to. And it's like, part of that good time is, like, letting out, like, the venom. Like, it is, like to have a good time, you really got to, like, just, like...
Yeah.
Let it out. But, 100%. Like, ultimately... Yeah, he just seems like a very cool dude.
It makes sense, actually. It's like a safe space to let it out, and then you go and be a decent person.
Yeah, go back
to your office
job.
It's very funny. Yeah. People are like, this sort of music, how could you listen to this? It makes people angry. And then they're the sweetest people ever.
Yeah.
And then every rapper and everything, they all get cancelled, and, like, all the stuff comes out, and they're terrible people. And the music is like, love everyone. But think about, like, Ellen DeGeneres and stuff. It's all like, let's be nice. And then you hear they're terrible people. These guys' song lyrics are like, let's kill them.
Let's
they're
kill
like,
people.
Hug time. Hug circle.
Yeah, totally.
It's crazy how it works.
It's like this, like I said, like they all had bands before this, and they were like, they were well known, and like I said, like Terra's still going, like Scott Vogel and Nick Jett, they're still doing Terra. Todd Jones, he's not in the band anymore, but he still records and produces them.
Yeah.
But he has just made a name for himself since the Carry On days. As one of the best, not only one of the best guitarists in, like, heavy music, but also one of the best songwriters in heavy music. Because, like he's just done so many bands. He did a band called Betrayed, who I fucking love. They were, like, melodic, more melodic hardcore, like a throwback to sort of like some 80s stuff. Then his best known band is a band called Nails, who are just a grindcore band. Just like a straight up metal band, and it is the most disgusting music you've ever heard.
Nails is a great name.
It's so it's just called Nails. They're so good. So like they're just like you know, like they're, I like that. He's like, this isn't rock star bullshit, but as far as the underground goes, these guys are the rock stars of the underground.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. True. Like, before just in terms of like,
kind of after this and no, the next I think they became the rock
stars. They've built this reputation.
Wow.
And I don't mean like they see themselves that way. I mean, I just think like they are looked up to as like Scott Vogel was one of the first sort of like hardcore memes. Like, he just had these ridiculous. This ridiculous stage banter and his whole thing was like, more stage dives. And it...
Yeah, he did say more stage dives.
I need more stage... And that just became his thing. And then, like, you know, that became a meme on the internet and stuff. And it's like, he was the guy. And now you see bands sharing reels on Instagram just of their pit calls. Like, just I want you to turn this into... Fallujah or something like that. Something funnier than that. Right. Like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know what he said. I heard like, I thought he said, I need stage time. And I was like, dude,
hey.
But it's stage dives. That's so funny. There's like an iconic thing that he says.
Yeah.
Do you know if the live Japan thing, do you know if that's a big crowd or not?
I have no idea. I don't even know what the venue
is. Like a tiny room. It obviously sounds great. So they might have done a room where they're more thinking about the live sound than they are the crowd.
Yeah.
But it sounds like the ones where you see where they're performing and then like way out, there's a few people being like, that's, it felt like those. And he's just going, I love you guys. You're my family. Yeah, like, there's got to be more than three people.
I mean, it was early days because like I know the set list is pretty much just this record and then a couple of extra songs. So it must have been 2003 or 2004 when they toured it.
Yeah, right.
So it wouldn't have been huge, but like, it would have been like probably... very small room, packed.
Yeah. There's that
tiny
room.
Have you
seen
packed.
These kinds of bands? Maybe they don't get to that level in like huge state. I feel like it would lose a lot of its.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, it's a weird one. I guess, like, the more room you have on stage, the more room you have to, like, be energetic and be physical, I guess. Like, I saw footage from Speed, who are Sydney band.
Right.
They played Knotfest.
Oh, okay.
On. Maybe this weekend? They played it recently. And it's like, it's the same sort of thing. Like hardcore is made for small rooms where everyone's on top of each other, but they're on this huge stage, you know, in Centenary Park somewhere. Yeah. But it's still like, the energy was still there. I could still see it even just on my phone. I was like, oh, that looks fucking cool. But I guess it's just maybe harder for the audience to connect with them.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
the audience. I'm sure they can... deliver the same show, but just something about the walls and it bouncing and everyone kind of...
It's like what you said before about like just doing like doing a show to 15 super keen people at Rat Club can feel as good as crushing to 200 at the store.
Yeah.
Like
I haven't done that, but
the fact that they're like right there, you know,
it's
there's
the
something
best.
You can see into their eyes, you can connect with them. It's just different things. Like, I think you do lose something when you go to the store, go to bigger venues like that, but you gain maybe followers, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it makes sense. I feel like for the audience personally, like, there's for me as an audience member, there's no benefits to seeing a comedian in an arena.
I didn't go see, watch Louis C.K. because, like, that's not how I want to see Louis.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to
see
him, like, down.
I don't want to look at a monitor of him.
It has nothing to do with any sort of political. I was like, I would have gone and seen him at
a
small club.
That's the biggest issue with Louis C.K.
right
now.
He's too big.
Is that he only does arenas.
He's too successful.
One more allegation, he'll be doing Rat Club.
Yeah. Push him back. Let's cancel him again so I can get him at my room.
That's so funny, actually. Just because you want to see a comedian, you destroy them.
But yeah, like I think these guys hit this from the get-go, from this first thing in 2002 that they ever did. They just crystallized what hardcore had become and sort of set a blueprint for what it was going to be for like the decade to follow.
Yeah, right.
Because this was definitely like a boom era. For me at least, this was a boom era. Like, maybe it's just because this is when I turned 18 and I got stuck going to these shows. But like, it was just such a huge, I wouldn't even call it a turning point. I would call it like a solidification of the culture. And I think I attribute that a lot to this record. And maybe it's just because it's in my brain, but like, even like the CD I had, like of Terror, it was like, so there's a lot of cultural tacit stuff here that I'll try and explain to you. So they had the college font. Do you know what I mean when I say that? Like, you might get a varsity jacket with like Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like college font. Yeah, right, and a lot of like people have their names sort on the back of their letters. Jerseys. Block letters. Yeah. Like, yeah. So that's a big thing in hardcore. Like, it always has been. Like,
really?
Yeah, using those sorts of fonts, basically. And I guess it's like, oh, we're a team. I don't know. It's like jockey, I guess. Like, it was more for the jocks rather than like the originally. Like, I'm talking like 80s, 80s, 90s stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
right.
So it's there's just this lineage of this visual language, I guess. Okay. So Terra had that. They had this like college font logo, but then it's all fucked up. Like the cover of the album was just like a mess of scratches and dust and noise. And so the logo is all distressed and kind of like illegible.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, those two things is exactly what they sound like to me.
Right. That's so interesting that you say the block letters and the jock thing. I feel like I feel like hardcore would have come out of the people who were like bullied by the jocks and all the, I think, you know what I mean?
I think because it's like early on, like it was just punk rock, and then stuff got like more aggressive and heavier and like metal influence came into it. And eventually I think because it's so macho and so like aggressive, that's kind of when it became more of a jock thing. And like this, the straight edge culture came out and like sort of, I mean, there's multitudes to any sort of culture, but I think it was really defined by this kind of, yeah, macho jock kind of perspective.
Yeah, right.
At least for a little while when the youth crew style was like getting really big.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. So like late 80s, early 90s sort of stuff. Okay. Yeah.
And then these guys are sort of a...
So they're all like, obviously they're all like dudes. Like these guys are bros, you know what I mean? Right. But like the fact that they took that, I don't think it was a conscious decision, but like for me looking at it, I'm like, it just makes so much sense. Like this college font logo all fucked up, and that's what they sound like to me. So there's like this classic hardcore sound, but there's these like, you know, there's guitar solos, there's like a huge use of maybe not dynamics, but like the songwriting, and it's like fast, slow, like everything's just so tight.
Yeah. Oh.
And the guitars, well, just everything, all of the instruments are just so present, like they're just so there.
The
and
drums
it's like,
are insane. The aggression, bring out the drums specifically. The drummers get the props that they deserve in hardcore.
Nick Jett does. Oh, yeah, yeah. Nick Jett definitely does. He's like, tight as such fuck, dude. Yeah.
Usually, most genres drums are meant to kind of just keep things going.
Yeah,
it's such a clear, like pivotal part of the genre that you hear, and like these drums,
the fills, like going from like the verse into like the breakdown,
so tight. But also, just like there's so much of the aggression and energy comes from just. It's really satisfying. Honestly.
It is. Yeah, yeah. Very satisfying. It's super cool. So I just think like I think they're great musicians. I think all the guys are like really good musicians, but it also like is like such a testament to just like playing to exactly your ability and just doing what you do really well.
Yeah.
And not trying to be too ambitious, but like just writing a good song that people can feel.
Yeah.
Like that people can like dance to.
Oh. Dance?
Yeah, like hardcore dancing. Yeah, absolutely.
Hardcore dancing. Yeah, what's that?
Have you ever okay, so
just a seizure.
So it's like so the song Push It Away, I forget which track it is. I think it might be like 3 or 4 on this. But it's got this like swing to it. So it's like a very upbeat, like
yeah, I know the one you talk about.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you can dance to that. Two-step dancing.
True, it's like, true,
like,
true.
Like almost
true.
Like, it's, look, to explain to someone who's never seen it, it's pretty much skanking.
Yeah.
it's pretty much
skanking?
You know, oh, God damn it. You know, ska music?
Yeah.
The skanking, almost like running on spot. Skanking. And it's just like a more aggressive version of that, I would say.
Right.
Sorry. But yeah, they just like took all this influence, like all this like classic era hardcore with this like real punk feel to it. And then added the aggression of metal without losing like that punk feeling of the songs. To me, I mean, it's really weird to try and describe like the emotional elements of what I hear because it's so abstract.
Yeah,
do you know what
course.
I mean? But that's what it is to me.
Years of memories and it's insane. There's some songs I listen to where it's like this song doesn't matter. Like it's connected to something else.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the song
totally.
Could suck, but it's connected to like so many beautiful memories. Like this is the best song I've ever heard.
That's a good point. Did you think it sucked? Did you think the record sucked?
No, I really enjoyed it.
Did you
really?
Enjoy
it. Yeah, it's cool because I think it should be. You know, the way it's intended to listen to, I assume, is like blasting in your car, you know, going through primary schools or something.
Yeah.
In a school zone. But it's a very awkward thing to listen to. And like I was driving to a cafe yesterday, and you got to like turn it down that you're parking and I was looking at you. And I'm like, what's wrong with this guy? Like, it's for a podcast.
It's for a local comedy podcast.
Trust me, this is going to be big for me. I need this, guys. But like, it's when it's just you, it's really enjoyable. Like, you do get why people, what you said about letting it out, it's really visceral.
There's something about this one as well, because like, I think the production really lends itself. Because I think the whole point with this style of music, and I've said this before, is there is a barrier to entry. Like, a lot of this stuff is hard to listen to. But then there's something with this where it's like, okay, so it's heavy and it's aggressive, but you can kind of understand most of what he's saying. Even though he's yelling, you can kind of, he's got a good enunciation. And the production, like, it's not just a mess of noise. There's one, I forget the name of the song, but there's one song where the song breaks down, it goes into this like big halftime part, and then the bass keeps like strumming throughout. Right. Like the guitars are ringing out, and then the bass is going under it with the drums, and like you can hear everything going on, and you're like, it's got this real groove to it. It's got real real feeling to it.
I thought it was really
makes you want to stage that.
Especially guys who's never, I mean, it does make you want to stage that. Especially guys who never actually listened to one from the beginning. Because I listened to the whole thing and then the live version straight after. Which is like, I want to do that with most albums.
We really jump in the deep end.
Even the different feeling of the live end and the energy that they give to the three guys in Tokyo. Like, I love it. I genuinely. So it's so cool. The one thing as someone who doesn't listen to hardcore is when you say a tough like barrier to entry is a lot of the songs sound the same to you, to your brain.
Yeah.
Because you just hear harsh noises.
Yeah.
So it's tough to hear like the intricacies and stuff.
Yeah.
And you make a good point. You hear a lot more intricacies in this album than I would, because as you said, Mark, he loves his metal, but he plays some really good stuff sometimes. I'm like, this is sick.
Yeah, yeah.
And your brain starts to like educate itself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not all just harsh noise.
It's tastemaking.
Exactly.
Same with comedy.
Like jazz, you know, everyone goes, that's like elevator music. It's because your brain just hears like three notes and you go, oh, it's just jazz. You hear certain jazz and you're like, this is beautiful. It's spiritual or whatever the hell. This is probably the same. It's just a tougher way to actually push
Absolutely.
Through.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. So like for me, it still sounds pretty like, I guess it sounds modern because so many bands look up to Terror as, like I said, like they're a blueprint.
Yeah,
and
right,
they just established this thing that just works. And like some bands who followed in their footsteps are super effective. Some bands are just like whatever. So it's not purely about the sound. It's not purely about the subgenre of hardcore.
Yeah,
it's like, it's about like, at risk of sounding like a complete dork, it's about the heart that they put into this, I think. Okay. Like,
nice.
I just think there's like a lot of heart on this record.
Wow.
I don't know.
I'm going to cry. This is beautiful. This is amazing.
So the one thing I found in a review is like, sort of like the review wasn't even being that negative, but it did bring up the fact that the lyrics are pretty simplistic, which I said to you in the first place when I sent you the record. But for me, I'm like, yeah, that's kind of like the, almost like the point. Like they've just boiled down like all these nuances and like specific experiences. Like, again, I don't know if this is like super, I don't think it's like an intellectual exercise on his part. It's just how he like process this into songwriting.
Right.
But the simplicity of it, it only adds to the brutality for me. It's about like, again, like I just keep coming back to this idea of feeling. It's just like, feeling. This is how I fucking feel.
Yeah.
Like this isn't exactly what happened. This isn't like a story. This is just how I feel.
Right.
And him, they just seem so in tune with each other. Like the music and the vocals just like, it's like a match made in heaven for me. Like,
It's seen as simplistic in regards to other albums in that space.
Yeah, I think this was
really.
I think this was a period.
What are the other ones talking? It's Socrates and Shakespeare. What are they?
Kind of. Yeah, really? Yeah. Definitely. I did the episode I did with Lauren Bonner. Like
the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah, a little bit, man.
Oh, really?
So the
let's go.
I did an episode a few episodes ago. We covered a band called Orchid, who are like more like the like from the screamo scene.
Okay.
So that was called an emo violence band. So really short songs, lots of blast beats, like sounds pretty metal. Like our friend Mark would probably be into it. But they had songs called I Am Nietzsche.
Oh wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so and there's other screamo bands called like Foucault after the philosopher.
Oh wow.
So there was like this whole other scene happening where it was like quote unquote intelligent hardcore.
Right.
Which I find so annoying, like as a term, so annoying because like there's an emotional intelligence to this, or like even the lack of is useful, and the lack of sort of like sometimes you just have to feel something, and it's like it is equally as intelligent to just let yourself have that outlet. Yeah. Sometimes
is this like the mainstream pop in that world, or no, not quite.
No.
When they say simplistic, is it in that sense of like it's trying to be commercial? No, I wouldn't say that. No, because
definitely not. Because I think the actual songwriting, and I'm not talking about the words he's writing themselves.
Oh, okay.
And I also like want to make clear, I don't have a problem with it. I think the lyrics are fucking great. Yeah, I really like the lyrics. So what I was getting, it was a period where like there were all these. It was just splintering, like hardcore or like the heavy guitar music was like splintering off. So you had like lots of different little subgenres and lots of different types of people getting into it.
Yeah.
So like you would have these people who went to a liberal arts college suddenly fronting a band. So they were like all these kind of like ironic satire song titles, like very long song titles was a thing for a while. And it's like, no snub to them, but I just don't like the critical response of being like, oh, well, that's smart and that's dumb this is good and that's bad. Because I'm like, to me, this is like almost like this album is like over 20 years old now. And to me, it's like a historical artifact of like music. You know, I just think it's so great. Yeah.
It could be a thing of like, you know, when some people are just so big or influential, just someone's got to hate them. Like you got to find stuff to pin down and kind of humble them and all that
and
stuff.
And people on this side of the fence also equally hate that other stuff because it's not authentic enough or it's not.
You reckon people are saying this in 2003 when this came out, or this is like 20 years later they're going, this is pretty simplistic stuff, we've grown.
Oh no, I think this was the review from the time.
Like, oh really? Okay.
This one got a few reissues, so I think this review that I was reading that from, it was a favorable review. He was just acknowledging like the simplistic lyrics, quote unquote. Right. But then the same guy from lambgoat.com, he goes on to sum it up. He's like, Terra has no pretensions and makes no apologies. I'm like, yeah, that's the point. there's no pretension. Like it's just like, bleh, like I just need to get this out and it works. But he does call it infectious, intense, and unrelenting.
That's what I would go with.
Which is a great
infectious is a really good word. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually going to ask, is this like, can you listen to this and then live a life? Like can you just like make love with a woman after this? Can you do your shopping? Do you listen to this when you're in public, or is it like is there a time and place?
I would not. Okay. So like I've got my record player here in my living room. I probably wouldn't buy this on vinyl. Okay. I probably wouldn't buy it
like,
on
would
vinyl.
When you're so walking the dog, are you playing this?
Maybe. If I felt like
you're
listened to it.
Driving around, you would?
Oh, yeah, probably more so. Okay.
And if you're with people, or no, is it like a you thing?
Not many people I know want to listen to it. Like when I used to live in share houses with friends who are in the scene, we just pop on hardcore records all the time if we want to.
Yeah, it does feel like it's almost like you got to explain yourself. Like it's like classical music. Have you ever had this? If someone listens to classical music, young people are like, what's wrong with this loser? You're like, it's music that's beautiful. This is almost the opposite with like, this is gross to my ears. Like, how dare you? It's too much.
Well, that's the point of the whole podcast.
No. You're just getting more fans slowly. Like every
everyone loves it. I'm like, no, you're supposed to hate it, Kinosh. Like,
but it does make you think like this is one of the only genres where you go like, where am I going to listen to that? I can't just play it anywhere.
Yeah.
Whereas you can play Ariana Grande anywhere.
Everyone's true.
Like, sure, whatever.
No. That's why I like, because I've got the records in the living room. Whenever I buy new vinyl records, I'm like, oh well, am I going to play it in this space?
Yeah.
I wouldn't. This is for the headphones, I think.
You reckon that's a huge reason why these scenes are so small? That sort of thing of like, because like, why are the biggest artists as big as they are? Because they can play them in Coles, they can play them anywhere. Like genuinely, you can play them anywhere.
I just think
you
like
can play this anywhere.
It's a youth culture partly, even though these guys are sort of old now and they're still doing it. But like, I think a big part of hardcore and punk is for young people.
But it's always like something like hip hop, but it does break through to mainstream. Whereas
hip-hop
this like
breaks through more.
Can't almost. Yeah. It's like not allowed. It's too much for the brain or something.
It's,
you know what I mean?
It's weird because some bands do. You know, like some bands are getting played on Triple J during the day.
Yeah, that's true. There's some really big ones.
Heavy bands.
Yeah.
But it's weird what is picked. It seems kind of arbitrary sometimes what is picked. But these guys would never get daytime airplay on Triple J. And maybe maybe that's because it's too dirty, it's too gritty. Maybe it doesn't have that sleek production that some of the bigger heavy bands have.
Yeah,
it's not, and that's the texture of the recording is what makes it so attractive to me.
Yeah.
Like that grit is part of.
Yeah, I guess it's not like a midday driving through. You get it, obviously. You understand where they're coming from. But that's, I think it feeds into the whole,
yeah.
Have you never heard of this? And it's like, because we can't.
Yeah, totally.
It.
Yeah,
we can't play
it
until it's like midnight.
I think
drunk.
The other thing is like, I wouldn't just listen to one song randomly either.
Yeah.
I'd want to, it's just like, I think that's more what you're getting at. It's like not a mood that you can just dip in and out of.
Yeah, it's Kesha, there's no single. This song and then Dua Lipa, you can't have that.
I kind of would want to, like I'd put it on a playlist with other bands like this, or I would listen to the full album.
But you don't have like, you probably have a bunch of playlists that are just all sorts of music.
I do. Yeah, I do.
Are these in those?
Yeah, but like that's
for you. That's for you.
Me,
yeah, yeah. But if you have them for like a party and stuff, you wouldn't put these in. Isn't
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah, not at all.
But it'd be great. It'd be great. 3 minutes. Everyone's like, what? I suddenly want to, you know, beat a minority. Oh, that's what I love about how like, all the
turns
friendship
and looks at Kianosh.
I love how it's all friendship and stuff because it's like this would kill at a clan rally. They would love this music. This is like the music for them.
Like that, like that's a big problem in the genre as well. Like there's a lot of punk bands and hardcore bands that are. That was the whole premise
that
of
openly.
The, well, Dave, you ever see Green Room? The movie Green Room.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right.
It's about white power punk.
Yeah.
Bands.
You're right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. There's a bunch of that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. But same with like there's a bunch of punk. Punk bands who are Christian. There's like any,
yeah, I mean,
any sort of political ideology also has its own version.
Muslim
of,
punk bands?
I hope so,
brother. Let's go. This song's called Allahu Akbar. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's so funny. I was like, I was calling this the Bible. Like I think in terms of hardcore music, this is the Bible. But then I've got
holy shit, really?
I've got you on the podcast. So that's the Quran.
Let's the Quran. Go. Happy Ramadan, guys. That's hilarious.
Most
hardcore I ever got was like Fall Out Boy. So this is really
they've all got pedigree as well.
Yeah.
Wentz was in.
Oh really?
Pete Wentz was in a band called Race Trader.
Ooh, that sounds a bit.
It sounds intense, right?
Race Trader.
Yeah, just a heavy beatdown hardcore band, and the drummer Andy Hurley. I know we've covered this before with other people.
I thought I was a Fall Out Boy fan.
Andy Hurley was in a band called Vegan Reich.
Vegan Reich.
Yeah.
That's
Vegan Reich.
Crazy.
And they weren't
the
like
worst
super...
of both. The two worst things you could be. That's rough. I'm vegetarian. I can make that joke.
I'm a Nazi. I can make that joke.
Let's go.
Some of my best friends are Nazis. Man, I keep getting awes. Just a sidebar. Getting groans because I've got this joke at the moment. I'm trying to figure out. And I'm like, oh, there's three options for white guys trying to become important. And it's like, option one, you become a rock climber. Option two, you become a BCF dad. Option three, domestic terrorism. But all three things just center around hanging out in the bush with your mates.
Okay.
You know?
Nice.
It's like, yeah. Nazis love camping. Sorry, Nazis love camps.
Oh, okay.
People don't like it. I don't know why. It's like not even like...
Because your brain's
it's
like...
It's right there!
You say camping and I'm imagining a tent and then I'm like, oh God, no, Jesus.
But the joke is right there.
Yeah,
I don't know why people are like, oh.
And you're not even...
Sorry.
It's just true.
Yeah,
you're not saying you love camp. You're just saying that's... anyway.
Yeah, it's a weird response. Anyway, back to the podcast. Sorry to...
That's great.
Trick you into a writing session.
No. I brought the Fall Out Boy in that. I knew that was going to come up. The Nazis always come up when you bring up Fall Out Boy.
Yeah, they've got the haircuts.
Thanks for the memories, guys. Thanks for the memories. Even though they weren't so... Anyway.
They weren't so great.
Great.
Your Jewish grandpa being like, they weren't so great.
That album that they had with that one, I remember like...
It's like the wrong type of tattoo for the punk scene.
Oh, dude. No, not the right tattoo. I remember getting like the CD for it and we just blasted it. It was my like 15th birthday or something. And it was so loud. And my dad looks at me and turns it up even more. And that's when I was like, this guy's a good guy.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
Because your dad sounds like the wildest.
It's objectively too loud. Like it's, I'm not enjoying it anymore. It's actually so loud now that I hate it. But I'm like, this is the coolest thing he's ever done. I'm not going to turn it down. So I'm just listening to Fall Out Boy at an obnoxious level, going through like Parramatta. This is when I was like still in those areas. Yeah. Going, thanks for the memories. Just a disgrace to
That's
my family.
So funny.
That and like AC/DC and because I started out playing bass way before I rapped. I played bass and I was obsessed with like Chili Peppers, AC/DC, Fall Out Boy, and then I got into like anything with a sick bass line. Like Jamiroquai would have some really cool bass lines and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and then I just got into all sorts of music. Like I used to give my brother shit for liking rap and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then I started rap. It's a whole thing, man.
How old's your brother?
30 now.
Yeah, so just a little bit older than you.
Yeah, he's 3.5 years older, but it really adds up. He's got he's got full white hairs in his beard.
Oh, really?
So, he worked for like the government and 000.
Oh, really?
Kind of like my mom, like real jobs. And then me and my dad are like, hello. Just go on stages and go, how are you? That sort of thing. So yeah, he's stressed.
That's so funny. I forgot where we were at. I think I've covered all my notes here are just sort of like repeating kind of what I've already said.
Me too. I'm seeing if I have more jokes.
I'll say this. I like this as a little... This is from Decibel Magazine, who are a constant go-to for this podcast.
Okay.
Just in a little interview that they did with Scott Vogel, they wrote, for 2 decades, Terror have spread their love for the genre around the globe, earning a reputation for their positive mindset and truth to power lyrics as much as their music itself. And I think that's something... That it's become kind of common in hardcore, where it's like after a certain point, a lot of the content in your songs is about being a part of the hardcore scene, and that, you know, it almost sounds like a trap, like comedians doing comedy about comedy, but I think for these guys, at least for Scott Vogel himself, he is just such a passionate, engaged person, and this type of music and this like live scene has been his whole life, that it makes a lot of sense for Terror to sort of be carrying this flag for the genre or the culture as a whole. And I think you could say the same. You're talking about hip-hop before. I think a lot of hip-hop sort of speaks to a similar
Authenticity thing. Really goes a long way. Like if it feels like someone's doing something for a genuine, authentic reason,
yeah,
a part of the culture is like, no, this is the guy. Like he's not the poster child for it or this and that. Like this is, because also you got to remember, it's probably people who seem like they are like a proponent of a culture probably exist in that culture in a very real way. Like everyone around it goes, I know this person. I've seen him grind and this and that. And that's a really huge thing, I feel like. Some people where they're like, who is this person? How they suddenly get big? It raises questions.
Yeah, sure.
And then some people we're like, that's the biggest thing in hip-hop is like, oh, he's from New York. He's from this. And every song's like, I rep my city and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a certain thing of being like, I'm from here. I don't care if you want to do West Coast stuff. This goes, I'm from this city. That's what you're going to get.
Yeah. That's the Griselda thing, right? They're from Buffalo, New York. And it's like, who's from Buffalo, New York? Actually, Scott Vogel's from Buffalo, New York. originally. Yeah, yeah. That's a tough place by the sounds of it.
It's either hardcore or rap.
Yeah. So, like, that's just an hour of me gushing about how much I love this record. But did you have more questions? You said you had some questions.
No, not many questions, to be honest. It's more just bad jokes that I think we got through a lot of them. No, not really. First record that I listened to, very much enjoyed it.
The stage dives.
This is
gonna get
the music I would truly love to go live to more than anything else.
I
would be terrified and I wouldn't bring things like empty pockets. But I'd love to just get punched and you know what I mean, thrown around. Like it feels there's a real feeling. It's a shame almost, I feel like, to listen to it and be driving.
It's a live genre.
Like a part of you is like, oh, that's very visceral.
I can't remember where I definitely saw Terror. Maybe I saw them at a venue called The Rev.
This was in Brisbane?
Oh, in Brisbane. Sick. So there was a venue called The Rev, which was like a converted church. And they would put...
So how many people are they playing to in that sort of venue?
When
coming
Terror
from LA,
played,
so
I'm just trying to remember. Was that where I saw them? Like, they toured a couple of times. I think I missed them on the first time round because I think they played a really small venue, probably close to when this came out.
But like over 100 people, surely.
But at the Rev, maybe 2 to 3, I reckon.
Right.
I think it was called The Rev. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting caught up on the wrong details. I don't have a good memory of it, though. It's really annoying because like...
Of the show?
Yeah, I really can't remember. Maybe I didn't see them live. I swear to God I have. I remember seeing Unearth at the Rev.
Okay.
I don't know if you know Unearth.
No idea.
If Sahin has introduced you to them.
I might have heard them, but I have no idea.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen Terra, but maybe I fucking haven't. I don't know.
Would they have been a... Yeah, they'd be just headlining, right?
They were... Yeah. They got... They after One With The Underdogs came out, which was the album after this, they blew up. They really blew up. Like I said, they are the quintessential... For me, if I was telling someone, if you were like... That's the thing. It's kind of a shame that so many other people have done these podcast episodes and listened to like... You know, either albums that have a greater barrier to entry or albums that are like way more niche than this one.
Right.
But I would say this is a perfect starting point for someone who wants to understand what hardcore is.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's 20 years old, so it's not like brand new, but it's also not where it started. So you could start here, go back, and go forward.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's interesting.
And so it'd be these guys, Terra, and then there's another band called Bane.
Bane.
And I think those two bands are kind of like opposite sides of the same coin, because Bane are like, they're very musical, like they're very like proficient musicians, a lot of different genre influence coming in, just like Terra. But Bane are like the more fun, silly version of hardcore, and Terra are like the more serious, like grim version of hardcore. And they're just both just so fucking good. And again, just comes down to like, what do you feel when you listen to this music? And I think that speaks to what you're saying about authenticity.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if it hits you in here, it's like, well, I can't really argue with it. I know it's abstract and it's probably like very subjective, but fuck
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. Even if your brain disagrees, your heart's like, well, this thing's like, fuck it.
Yeah, yeah.
Bang, silly, fun, silly hardcore sounds cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like just live, like they just seem like fun dudes. Like they're older dudes. I've seen them live a bunch and it's just like, it's always just a fun time and they just don't take themselves too seriously. Right. Like they write songs about real shit just like Terra do, but like when you see them live, they're just like,
funny. Whereas they're funny. Terra's got some rage in them. And
yeah, definitely. Like, right. They're more like, I guess like more in a fugue state of like stage time, like, you know.
You reckon they got to get into that? We'd have to kind of amp into that mindset every night. Hey.
Yeah, it's tough, man.
And then wind down and then get back into it every night.
I went and saw one of my favorite current hardcore bands. They're called Drug Church.
Yes, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Yes.
They play Crowbar and I was like so into it. I went with Rosie Delaney and like I was right up the front. Like and his whole thing in Drug Church, he's like, I don't want you to stop stage diving. Someone, one of you always has to be in the air while we're playing.
Whoa.
That's how before they even hit a note, he comes out just like very calmly. That's what he says. Patrick Kinlan is his name. He's like, you need to continuously, one of you needs to be in the air this whole set.
What?
And then they started playing. It was mental. It was fucking chaos. I got kicked in the head so many times.
Jesus.
And it was like, they played one of my favorite songs and I was like, I wasn't there yet. I wasn't like, I can't just get up. I'm like 38 years old.
Yeah, of course.
And I was like, but if they play this other song, I reckon that's going to get me in the air. But they didn't play it. So I didn't stage dive that night. But like, it's just to answer what you said before, like, yeah, it takes a bit for me at least.
Yeah,
at
of course,
38 years
of course.
Of age to really get into it.
Are there people just like genuinely like taking shifts? Just it's the same guy kind
of
stage.
Yeah, a lot of the same guys. Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. It's just like doing laps, basically.
I'll go again, man. Give me a minute.
It was so much fun. That Drug Church song, that drug church show at Crowbar was fucking fun.
That sounds fucking awesome. Yeah. Starting a show with that energy is like, well, I guess we're stage.
Just like a speech, like almost like stand up comedy. He's like, hey, like he's a very funny guy as well. He's just like, hey, if you stop stage diving, we stop playing.
Wow,
it's pretty funny. That's it from me, brother. Like if you got other stuff to
add that's
to the
it
content,
let's do it. I feel like
we did an hour. We did
completely understand hardcore now.
I think this, honestly, I reckon this album is like better than just listening to Lowest of the Low by Terra from the year 2003. That will do more for you than trying to speak to anyone about it, because it's not about my version of hardcore. It's not like, which is kind of like the paradox of like doing this podcast. It's not about what I experienced. It's about what it is. And I think this album is like a big tent pole for what it is.
Yeah. That's sick.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, you're going to be in Melbourne. This will come out. I think you'll probably be back by the time this comes out, but Make sure you watch the Raw national finals whenever they're on TV, wherever they are. We don't actually know.
We have no idea what's going on. I don't even know if I'm on it, but
you're gonna get to Melbourne Town Hall, and they're like,
wait, this guy?
Oh, we thought you were white. It's like, my name's Kinos.
You're not Mickey Weingarten. What the hell are you doing here?
But tell people about your social media accounts.
Syndicate Kianos is my Instagram.
Kianosh.
Yes.
Kianosh.
Kianosh. Yeah. Don't worry about it, to be honest.
And, are you on TikTok or anything?
Yeah, I'd be on Grindr. No, I'm not on TikTok. I'm not on anything.
You seen Anthony
really.
LaCascia? He put up a joke the other night. It made me laugh so hard. It's like, my mate downloaded Grindr because he thought it was Greek Tinder.
That really
got me. Shout out to Anthony LaCascia.
Kind of is. No, we're having fun.
I think that was his actual tag. I think it was like, and it is.
We're having fun. Yeah, find me on Greek Tinder and Instagram. Yeah. Watch me.
Nice.
Yeah. Watch me at Rat Club, hopefully.
So. Yeah, yeah. Come to Rat Club every Monday if you're in Sydney. It's down at Mosh Pit in Erskineville. Dead Ramones on Instagram. Send us a DM. Tell us what you think. I think it's deadramonespodcast@gmail.com if you want to write me a letter.
Nice.
No one has yet. No one has yet. But if you want to fact check me, I've got a lot of people messaging me with like really niche facts about a really specific period of hardcore.
It wasn't Buffalo, New York, you idiot.
Yeah, stuff like that. Literally stuff like that. And I love it. I actually love it. So please message me if you want. Nice. And then my personal account on Instagram is just ryan.d.sim. And I'm doing a show. Fuck. I'm doing a show at the Sydney Comedy Festival. It's looking real good. I'm really happy with it. It's called 13 Jokes after the Fugazi album, 13 Songs. So perfect crossover. If you're a fan of this podcast and a fan of my comedy, come see me be mental on stage.
Great. Saw a trial show. Great show. It's really fun. Go. Yeah. Very fun.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Kianos, for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It was good times.